Well, 5 years after a powerful earthquake and a tsunami triggered a nuclear disaster in Fukushima, work to clean up affected areas is slowly continuing. The Japanese government has recently revealed that costs associated with decommissioning the power plant and compensating victims have nearly doubled to 250 billion Australian dollars. One of the daunting tasks Japanese authorities face is the removal of hundreds of tons of melted nuclear fuel from the reactors at the site. The process has been made nearly impossible by extremely high levels of radioactivity.
They've sent in some robots. All the robots have been disabled because of the high radiation field. It may be possible that we were never able to remove the fuel. You may just wind up having to leave it there and somehow entomb it as it is. I mean, that's certainly a possibility. There's no playbook. They're making this up as they go along, and that's in a lot of ways the best they can do.
That's Gregory Jaczo, former chairman of the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission, speaking to ABC correspondent Mark Willacy. Now, Mark was one of the first journalists at the scene of the nuclear disaster in 2011. He's travelled back to the countryside of Fukushima to witness how people in the region are coping 5 years later. His documentary, Fukushima, airs on ABC television tonight at 9:30 p.m. He's with us this morning. Good morning, Mark.
G'day, Hamish. How are you?
Very well, thanks. Just take us back. Unbelievably, it is almost 5 years. I think the anniversary is. Is this early March?
Yeah, it'll be actually 6 years.
Six years. I'm sorry. Yeah. In March, you were one of the first reporters at Fukushima because you were at the time the ABC's North Asia correspondent based in Tokyo.
That's right. I was unfortunately caught a bit short, though, on the day of the earthquake, Hamish. I was down in Kyushu, which is about 1,000 kilometres south of Tokyo, doing a story about a Japanese sword maker. But let's just say I got back to Tokyo quick smart. And yes, we did get up into the northern part of the tsunami zone. And over the weeks, we made our way down. But it was just one of those stories. I know you've covered big stories, but this one sort of kept on giving us new sort of twists and turns. And dealing with the nuclear meltdowns at Fukushima was particularly hard because we just didn't have any information. In fact, the Prime Minister at the time, who features tonight in the documentary, Naoto Kan, even he was getting no information about what was going on. And it was a very hard place to report from because of the physical problems of dealing in a tsunami zone, but also those unknowns, the radiation you can't see, touch or smell.
Unusually, it was a kind of triple disaster, really, because there was the earthquake, the tsunami, and then the nuclear situation. I know that for many crews covering that story, it really became a kind of challenge to just be there, to continue to exist and function and operate because of food and accommodation and things like petrol. Was that your experience of it? What did you face?
Yeah, well, you know, we flew to the far north of the main island of Honshu and then we drove down into the tsunami zone. But we had to stay up in the mountains, the mountain range that sits behind the coastal plain of northeastern Japan. And every day you'd get up before dawn and head down in there. And obviously you're wearing sturdy boots because you're going over through mud and over debris, wrecked houses. There were bodies everywhere. And then you'd retreat back up the mountain and file your stories, get a few hours sleep and keep doing it, and you'd move further south each day and try and find a new hotel in the mountains. So it was a real challenge, it's one of those situations where you operate on very little sleep, but the story is just so compelling. And I have to say that a lot of the Japanese were relying on foreign reporters to do a lot of the stuff about the nuclear meltdowns, because a lot of the Japanese reporters simply wouldn't go into that nuclear fallout zone, if you like.
I remember at the time thinking to myself, if this had happened anywhere else other than Japan, the whole thing would be absolute chaos. You'd turn up in these towns where people would be queuing for hours, very orderly, very calm, very polite and respectful, just for maybe a few litres of petrol. Do you think that there was something peculiar about the sort of Japanese culture that enabled them to deal with this as they did?
I think that's a fair point. It's a very homogenous culture, obviously, and there's a strict hierarchy in that culture, and everyone plays their part. And I do remember going to an evacuation centre, so where the survivors had retreated up into the hills behind one of the towns that had been totally obliterated, and they had no water, but there was a swimming pool because it was a school, so they were all in a line with buckets, and kids were there, old people, and they all worked perfectly in harmony, and I never heard a raised voice place. I never saw anyone push into the front of a queue. And it sort of made me quite proud to live in Japan and quite proud to know a lot of these Japanese people, because in this worst time since World War II, they all pulled together. The only chaos, I have to say, Hamish, that I found or heard about was what was happening inside that nuclear plant at Fukushima, because it was just a scenario that they had never wargamed for.
You've been back to Fukushima for this documentary that airs tonight. What is it like there now in the areas around Fukushima and at the plant itself?
Well, inside the plant, it does look quite organised. You know, there's thousands of workers there every day, and they're getting around with their, you know, their white suits on, and they seem to be making progress. But having said that, having interviewed the man behind who is in charge of the cleanup, rather, you know, we're looking at 40 to 50 years to clean it up. We're looking at a situation where they do not know the exact location of the three melted nuclear cores. And they say that it's a case of having not invented the technology yet to even get that 800 or so tons of nuclear fuel out. So the challenges are immense, and if you travel to the communities just outside the nuclear plant, it's that old science fiction setting. You know, it's like people have been literally sucked up into a spaceship and they're gone. And what you see is meals still on tables. You still see clothes hanging on shopping racks, but no one's around. The only people you see around are the decontamination workers scraping up that topsoil and putting it into the 10 million plus bags that are there. So it is quite a surreal experience. And we spent a lot of time there. And I have to say, while we were there, there was another reasonably big aftershock. And it sort of reminded you just how precariously placed Japan is on the Ring of Fire.
My mind was playing tricks on me earlier. I thought it was 5 years, the anniversary that we're coming up to, but it is in fact six. The thing that surprised me about going to Chernobyl was how much the sort of natural environment had reclaimed the space. Is that the case at Fukushima?
Very much so, Hamish. You know, we saw cars, obviously, in a formation like a parking lot, but all the weeds had grown up over them. It was quite an eerie sight. And you're seeing nature reclaiming houses, and obviously animals are thriving in there. The wild pigs were everywhere. It was quite amazing. We nearly ran over one on an abandoned or an empty road one day. So very much like Ukraine, Chernobyl, and that whole idea that, yes, there's been a terrible event there. Yes, this poisonous radiation has been emitted, but nature still is fighting back and reclaiming.
Were you doing the sort of the test? Did you carry the Geiger counter around? Are we still seeing those really significant radiation readings?
Yeah, you do get those spikes in these hot spots. So you'd be driving through an area and it will have a screech at you. But we were in the nuclear plant, I have to say, and that's where, when we were down next to the reactor building. So inside there somewhere are these melted nuclear cores. And the TEPCO representatives that were with us got very nervous because we got a sudden spike. It went up over 200 microsieverts an hour towards 300, which, you know, that's a measure it's quite high. And so we had to withdraw from that area. So it gives you an idea of just how difficult it will be for TEPCO to get this cleanup job done inside the nuclear plant. And in fact, you know, they have to let workers go after a while if they reach a certain exposure limit. And so, you know, they need tens of thousands of workers to help clean it up. But that's the balance they have to strike.
Depending on who you listen to, there's real skepticism about the possibility of getting this properly cleaned up, about removing any risk of things like nuclear terrorism. What's your take out from this investigation?
Look, I just think it's a case that even in one of the most highly ordered and efficient societies like Japan, the fact that there was collusion between the government of the day, between the nuclear power companies and even the media, that this was allowed to happen. Because, you know, while I was writing a book about this a couple of years ago, you know, I came across these documents that showed that TEPCO had done a simulation about an earthquake off the coast and found that a tsunami of about 15 and a half meters would hit the plant. And that's exactly what happened. But do you know what happened to that simulation? It was put on a shelf. It was put away. They didn't want to look at it. And then 4 days before the earthquake, they decided they should submit that to the nuclear regulator. So that's my take out on this. I'm not going to take a position on nuclear power one way or the other, Hamish, but what has to happen is total transparency, total safety. They have to obviously take any warnings, any simulations very seriously, because if they don't, this is what happens. Fukushima is both a natural and a man-made disaster.
Really looking forward to watching the documentary tonight. Mark Willacy, thanks so much.
Thanks, Hamish.
Mark Willacy, who is the ABC reporter, he was the Japan correspondent previously. His documentary, Fukushima, airs on ABC TV tonight at 9:30 p.m., 6 years almost since that disaster. It's a quarter to nine.